This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we are going to discuss a new ProPublica investigation exposing how at least 10 U.S. gun makers, including Glock, Smith & Wesson, and Remington, handed over names, addresses, and other private data to the gun industry's chief lobbying group, the National Shooting Sports Foundation. That foundation then used that information to create a massive database with major political implications. Corey Johnson is an investigative reporter with ProPublica and a Pulitzer Prize winner for a series of stories he wrote on lead when he worked for the Tampa Bay Times. He's also co-founder of the Ida B. Wells Society for Investigative Reporting. Hi, Corey. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's great to have you, Corey. Before we start and talk about your piece, I just really want to give a shout out to your colleagues. You tweeted these articles this morning, a couple of articles about just horrific deaths of women who were pregnant. And because of extreme abortion bans in Texas, could not get the care that they need. And you tweeted about this. And I just want to give a shout out to your colleagues. Can you just talk about how important these pieces are?
Yes, I mean, the response to these pieces are just completely overwhelming, because it's perhaps one of the most, if not the most important issue affecting America in a range of issues. My colleagues, who I know very well and have kind of had a front row seat to many of the horrific things that they've been uncovering, they've been working night and day, you know, sometimes sacrificing family time and other time to get out here and to knock on the doors to try to piece together what's happening to women and their families. And there's the degree of difficulty on getting these stories, fact checking them, making sure that they're accurate, and then bringing them to the public is extremely high. There's in many cases, the women and the families don't know what happened to them because the doctors never told them. They never got the records. And so kudos to my teammates and ProPublica as an organization for backing these stories. They are very labor intensive, time expensive. You don't exactly know what you're going to get before you actually set sail. And I'm just in awe of what my female colleagues have been able to do for the country. It's really driving a super important conversation about the impact of that Supreme Court decision.
Lizzie Presser and Kavita Serrano wrote the piece, "A Pregnant Teenager Died After Trying to Get Care in 3 Visits to Texas Emergency Rooms." And then Kavita Serrano and Cassandra Jaramillo wrote a piece, "A Woman Died After Being Told It Would Be a Quote Crime to Intervene in Her Miscarriage at a Texas Hospital." It's just absolutely devastating. And we spent a lot of time on this show, Corey, criticizing and critiquing major media outlets. I think it's what we also try to do, and honestly, after the election, we're going to do this again, is to really praise the journalists doing really good work out there, like you and your colleagues. And as you say, it takes so much time to put these pieces together. It's not like this is a quick turnaround. I mean, you've got to get out there and knock on doors to try to get, in some cases, to get these families to share these horrific stories.
Yes, I like to say that there is a difference between covering the news and uncovering the news. Mm-hmm. And in many instances, a lot of what is super important for people to know is being hidden. And because of all kind of factors, with the collapse in local news, the financial strain, the politics of the day, it's very, very difficult to be able to go after these stories. And readers and viewers, they naturally expect that journalists would get this information, and they tend to criticized the entire industry, and rightfully so, for not doing more. But a lot of people don't understand what all goes into it. And I appreciate, and I'm sure my colleagues and other journalists appreciate the fact that you see what we're trying to do on behalf of the country, on behalf of our communities. It's incredibly difficult. I could give a 5-hour conversation about how people are so afraid to talk to us when we actually can find them and show up at their doors. They're petrified and afraid of losing their job or being hurt in some way if they just share what they know. And so it takes a lot of patience. It takes a lot of determination. For whatever others aren't doing, I know that the people at ProPublica are absolutely giving their all to make this moment impactful and real for our country.
Yes, and kudos to all of you. We have your reporters on regularly because you do such great work. And that leads us to your latest investigation, Corey, Without Knowledge or Consent. This is an incredible investigation. You write, in the late 1990s, the gun industry launched a secret project to elect firearm-friendly politicians, manufacturers, gave political operatives sensitive, intimate information on their customers without their consent. The story behind the data sharing and its impact has never been revealed until now. So how did you find out about what was going on here? How did you uncover this?
Well, it was something that emerged over a period of months after I set sail. I literally set sail on this topic maybe a week or so after the tragedy in Uvalde, Texas. And I, like everyone else, was mortified, horrified to see the images of those police officers standing near that classroom door as bullets were ringing out on those children, and to see the pain, the agony of that community. And this was maybe a week or so after another tragic shooting in Buffalo. And frankly, for a few days, I was in a state of depression as I was watching those images, because I couldn't quite figure out. The question that was just burning on my mind is, how did America end up here, where children could be literally blown to bits and we are just kind of not doing anything about it, that the politicians kind of have a collective shoulder shrug about it? And, I'm 50 years old. I'm not the old man in the room, but I've been around a little bit. And I kept saying to myself, I don't remember it being this way. How did we get here? And that question of how did we get here is what drove the initial research and reporting on this topic. And then over time, as I got to more people, more lobbyists, some of them were current, some of them were formers. I got to some former gun execs. This program began to emerge, and what industry companies had done with the warranty cards slowly began to emerge. But I really crisscrossed the country to knock on doors, and even took a trip and knocked on doors in Europe in order to find the people who knew about this program.
So the data, as you write, initially came from decades of warranty cards filled out by customers who buy guns. They returned those cards to gun manufacturers for rebates and repair or replacement programs. We've all filled out these cards when we buy various things. Yes. You write, a review of dozens of warranty cards from the 1970s through today found that some promised customers their information would be kept strictly confidential. Others said some information could be shared with third parties for marketing and sales, but none of the cards informed the buyers that their details would be used by lobbyists and consultants to win elections.
That is correct. And that's a very important detail, because as I'm talking to privacy experts as well as former regulators who deal with privacy laws, that's the key component around any of these warranty cards and privacy policies. They explained to me that when you turn in these cards and you share your information, that's still your information, that a company doesn't have the right to just do what they want to do with your information willy-nilly without explaining exactly what that is. And so the warranty cards and the tiny language, I mean, if you've ever seen some of the language on these cards, it's really, they're really small, but that in the tiny language, the companies have to explain what they're doing. And so it's a consensual thing. And what more and more of these experts and regulators are saying is that when they looked at these cards and I explained what we had found and shared some of the documents, they said to them that this appeared to be clear-cut violations of law.
So can you tell us more about the National Shooting Sports Foundation?
Yes. So the National Shooting Sports Foundation was established in 1961, and it really was started with a mission of trying to promote shooting sports, hunting, a love for hunting, a love for the shooting sports, a love for guns, but in a safe kind of way. So if you ever looked at them or even got a glimpse of what they were doing, they often were partnering with Boy Scouts and community clubs just to foster a genuine love and care for guns and hunting and the sport and the heritage of a father taking their son out into the woods or taking their daughter out to teach them about guns and how to safely use them, administrate them, and the like. That's been the NSSF's like marker for decades. They're not as well known in the public sphere as the NRA, but in the last 4 or 5 years, they've actually gained more political prominence than the NRA. And what this story reveals is that in the late 90s, because of the like a twin hydra of economic threats, political threats, and legal threats, the industry gun makers were panicked about the state of their industry. And they were openly talking about how if an Al Gore presidency came to be, that they could go extinct, that if some of these lawsuits that had been filed against them in the late 90s had actually been successful, looking at what had just happened to the tobacco industry and the lawsuits against tobacco, big tobacco, the gun industry was openly talking about they could go bankrupt. And a couple companies did indeed go bankrupt. And so in the context of these pressures, these threats, they turned to these warranty cards as a tool to be able to build a political force. They saw that during the late 90s, 80s, they didn't really have a strong way. The industry now, gun companies, didn't have a strong way of being able to mobilize people who bought their guns. And they looked at the numbers and they saw about 30 million Americans at that time were gun owners. And so for years, for decades, the National Shooting Sports Foundation had just allowed the NRA to run the race around political mobilization. And NRA is definitely the one that captures everyone's consciousness when you start talking about politics. But on the sidelines, in the shadows, the NSSF has been playing this key role using this database to be able to identify people who can't be identified easily, no other way, there's all kind of laws that restrict the public from knowing who buys guns. And the NSSF and the NRA have lobbied various states to keep the names of who have hunting licenses secret. So it's very difficult to know who actually is a gun owner, who actually is a hunter nationwide. But behind the scenes, the NSSF have been gathering that data and then using it to be able to mobilize, to send letters saying, hey, if you don't vote, the Clinton is going to take your gun away. If you don't vote, this Democrat is going to take your gun away. They're going to take your Second Amendment rights. And what we found out talking to a few experts, it clearly appears to have had a major impact that at the beginning of this program to launch into using these warranty cards as a political mobilization tool, at the same time that that happened, began in 2000, it's the same time that experts saw a shift happen where gun owners began to emerge as a political bloc, all going mainly for Republicans.
Right. And so the gun companies turned over all of this private information that people wrote on these warranty cards over to the NSSF. And then, as you say, they figured out whether a gun buyer was registered to vote, and those who weren't would be encouraged to register. From 2000 to 2016, the organization poured more than $20 million into its voter education campaign, which was called Vote Your Sport. Today, it's called Gun Vote. And the NSSF trumpeted the success of its electioneering in reports, claiming credit for putting both George W. Bush and Donald Trump in the White House and firearm-friendly lawmakers in the House and Senate, mostly Republicans. What is this group Gun Vote doing right now?
So Gun Vote is very active on social media, and we presume privately in the homes of gun owners today. We've actually began reaching out to try to quantify exactly what Gun Vote is doing right now. We hope to have some stories about that in the coming days, but we don't know exactly. We've heard rumblings, but we don't know exactly what Gun Vote is doing in this current election. Excuse me, I'm having a technical issue.
I'll just read from your story because this is really important. There's a lot of really important background in Corey's piece. The 2002 midterm election saw Republicans pick up seats in the Senate and the House. Bush won re-election. Republicans gained four more seats. And then they rolled back many of the gains gun control advocates made in the 90s. Despite pre-election promises to support a renewal of the assault weapons ban, George W. Bush did not take action. The ban expired in 2004 and was silent as Republicans stymied reauthorization attempts. And now, sadly, Corey, we're seeing, I mean, I can't even believe it, 14-year-olds going in to schools and shooting up their classmates with these, yes, these guns.
Yes, the pro-gun lawmakers have been very, very effective at frustrating and blocking, you know, any attempts for even gun laws that most Americans, whether you're on the right or left, support.
And Corey, you know, with all the reporting that you've done, we only have a few minutes. This is one question I've been thinking about in the last 6 months. Given that firearms are the leading cause of death for children and teens in this country, disproportionately affecting kids and teens of color, why do you think gun violence is not getting more attention in this and all of the election coverage?
Well, some experts believe that it actually hurts Democrats whenever they bring up the gun issue. After the Al Gore defeat, Both Al Gore and Bill Clinton both said publicly that the gun control issue hurt their election chances. And so from that moment on, you know, you really don't see politicians, particularly on the Democratic side, wanting to even openly discuss gun control. That there's people who are so connected to their guns, it's not just for hunting purposes, but for self-defense purposes in cities and the like, that issue is as strong to a lot of people and as dear to a lot of people as the abortion issue, that it's a single issue that can be determining of who wins and who loses. And so the experts seem to think that that's a major contributing factor to why it's not talked about more, particularly in election season.
And what's scary is, you know, the Democrats, there used to be Democrats who voted against gun control. And now you've got the majority of Democrats, overwhelming majority of Democrats voting for gun control. If the Republicans take, well, the White House, the House, or the Senate, nothing will be done on gun control.
There's certainly a very high bar in order to get anything past the House, the Senate, and the White House these days on this issue, because it's such a powerful issue. And what we're learning more and more, and we think is important, is that we didn't know the extent that the gun industry, the gun companies themselves, had tipped put their finger on the scale and tipped the balance. Mm-hmm. And it's now clear to us, and hopefully it'll be clearer to the public as we continue to do these stories, that the gun companies themselves are a major force bringing all of this to being.
In our remaining minute, Corey, your piece came out last week. What response are you receiving from the piece, Without Knowledge or Consent?
Well, when people see the piece, they are appreciative. They've been sharing a lot of praise. They're saying that it's opened their eyes in many ways into stuff that they didn't know. I think the overall election and the panic around the actual election, maybe I shouldn't use the word panic, but there's certainly a very fierce concern about the election one way or the other. And we think that might be top of people's minds at the very moment. But when people see the story, they absolutely get it and they appreciate it.
Corey Johnson is an investigative reporter for ProPublica. I hope you take the time to read his piece, Without Knowledge or Consent. At least 10 gun industry businesses, including Glock, Smith & Wesson, Remington & Mossberg, secretly handed over names, addresses, and other data to lobbyists, who then used those details to rally firearm owners to elect pro-gun politicians, mostly Republicans. Corey, huge thanks for this important story, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. You all take care.
Thank you. You too. Corey Johnson is an investigative reporter with ProPublica. He's a Pulitzer Prize winner for a series of stories on lead when he worked for the Tampa Bay Times. He's co-founder of the Ida B. Wells Society for Investigative Reporting. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.